Excuse me, recording has started. You may now proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 8th GNSOE PDP team meeting taking place on the 28th of August, 2018 at 1300 UTC for 2 hours. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you were only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Emily Taylor of the RRSG and Caboose Arista of GAC, as well as Krista Spain, ICANN Board Liaison. They have formally assigned Theo Gears and Raul Goslin as their alternates for this call and for any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the right-hand agenda pod. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Aiden, I see your hand is raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Terry. This is Aiden. I did update my statement of interest today just to note that I have joined the Mozilla Foundation as a policy fellow. That's the only change that I made. Thanks.
Thank you for this. Seeing or hearing no further, if you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documents and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call. So please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the call. Thank you, and I'll turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritt. Please begin. And Kurt, this is Terry. I believe you still may be muted.
Yep, thanks, Terry. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining the call. Last week, the call was at 6 a.m. and everybody was here on time, and today the call is at 11 p.m. and everybody's here on time, so you guys are great. The agenda looks pretty, but I think we can get to the main item on the agenda, which is to start discussions about Section 4.4 at SEC, the lawfulness and purpose of processing GTLD registration data and the specific purposes for that are listed in that section. So that's the highlight of today's meeting. Just as part of, after the welcome, we'll talk about input received on the triage report and next steps there. We've done work on a project plan to lay out discussion topics for the next several meetings, and we'll do a quick touch base on the appendices having to do with URS, UDRP, and the transfer policy. And then we'll talk about the purposes of processing GTLD registration data as they're laid out in the temp spec and what they might become, and then we'll confirm the action items and wrap up. And the only welcome item I have, or initial item I have, is the request for training that was actually part of the charter. And actually, I meant to talk about it last week, but it slipped through the cracks. And we have a request from the registry stakeholder group and support from many other corners of this group. We have a specific recommendation from Aiden. I'm just going to just take that on board. Everybody here on the support side is fully committed to performing that training. We think it'll be done in a session during the Tuesday and Thursday meeting. But it's something I'll certainly attend. So if anyone wants to provide more additional advice in addition to what we received from Aiden, or ideas for how to go about that, you're welcome to send them in over the next day or so. And in the meantime, the support staff will pull some options together for our discussion. And I thank you, Christina, for noting it's a joint request from the contracting party house. So I'm going to leave that. I'm going to pause for 10 seconds and then go on to the next item in the agenda. So, again, thank you very much for that. We've received input on the triage report from several of the participants in this meeting. Ashley, yes. So I think the training will be available for alternates too. Going out on a limb here. So really briefly on the triage report. I categorize the comments into these six buckets. One is that that we should reinforce the purpose of the report and reinforcement that the comments made and recorded in the report are not binding, limiting, or prejudicial on any party. And, that was put in several ways, and they're not all covered in this bullet, but we're certainly happy to reinforce that point and just take on board exactly what was said in the comments. Some of the comments said some important points that were made either during the survey or during the discussion were missed and should have been included. So those will be taken on. There was, in some cases, pointed out a correction of some statement of legal opinion or legal summarization of the GDPR or other documents. And so I found one instance where I was kind of sloppy in the terminology. So where that was pointed out, we'll certainly take that on board. There was some rewording of the issues. So I'll just talk about this for a second, but comments were, during the survey, in the survey were made to the effect of, the temporary specification should be changed to say this. And we wrestled a little bit with it because we didn't want to say in the comments that the temporary specification should be changed. And we went to, we might consider changing it to this. And then I kind of went back to my law school days and said, well, this is an issue summary and issues are in the form of a question. So the question should be, should the preliminary report be changed to this? So there were some comments that, looked at rewording those, and rather than putting the issue in the form of a yes or no question, which can be answered yes or no and is not prejudicial either way, rather say, some people say this should be done and other people say not this should be done, this should not be done. So I'm kind of, I'll listen to comments offline, but I'm kind of predisposed to, not duplicate the issue by saying both sides of it, but to leave the issue in the form of a question. There was some advocacy I detected in some of the commentary, and I kind of think that should be discouraged. And then finally, it was my use of the term, successor specification, and some people suggested that should be changed to the docket exceeds, this is going to be a policy. So, reviewing all of that, the charter surely said that, we're creating a policy. So that's for sure. On the other hand, I'm really confused about, this being a temporary specification and, the board choosing specification and not a temporary policy. And, in a sense, what the heck does the GNSO do with that? Because the GNSO makes policies, not specifications. So, I've asked some board members and some others to kind of look into that, but, that comment on board that we're creating a policy here and accept that. So that's sort of input, will probably be accepted. But, I want to get some background myself into the differentiation between a policy and a specification. So at the end of the day, I really don't want this triage report to take up a lot of our time. So my plan is to do a draft accepting, the substantive points that were made and set out for your review. And, we can either then accept that, or you know, to get past this, you know, just really shorten up the report and submit, you know, the bare bones of a triage report, which would essentially be the color-coded matrix with some explanation about, you know, why the colors are good or bad or something like that. So, you know, I'll carry this discussion on online and try not to take up our time. You know, we'll go over the project plan for in a second, but you can see it's action-packed. Margie?
Yes, hi. Thank you, Kurt. This is Margie. I just specifications
with it. Hey, Margie, you're not coming. You're not coming across quite as well as you'd like. Maybe get closer to the mic or do something else.
Okay. Is this better?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that consensus policies include specifications. So I don't think it's correct for you to make the statement that the GNSO policy process can't affect specifications. It certainly can. So I just wanted to correct that, a misunderstanding.
Yeah, so that's not what I meant to say, but I understand exactly what you're saying, and I'm, you know, resigned to it being a policy, but I still want to understand the differentiation between a policy and a specification. But I certainly take on board that a policy can affect a specification. So I, you know, maybe I didn't say it quite as clearly as I'd like. Thanks for that. Milton?
Thank you.
Yes. Hello, Kurt. This is Milton Mueller, NCSG. I guess I didn't make my intentions clear enough to you, but I sent you this form about the data elements that are redacted in the temp spec, and I think my intention was that this is a simple matter of recording positions. It's not a matter of debating where we agree, and that a critical part of the triage report is to find out where we agree and where we disagree on redacted data elements. Indeed, I think that's like the most important thing about the temp spec, and I think it's a very simple matter for people to specify which data elements they agree should be redacted and which ones they don't agree with, and I would hope that we could get that into the report. I sent you a form where people could record this, and I was hoping that it would have been posted so that people could respond to it several days ago. So I'm just a bit, you know, maybe I didn't make it clear that I was expecting that to be in the temps, in the triage report.
Thanks, Milton. So from my standpoint, you didn't make it clear. So you'll see a reference to it actually later in the project plan where we, you know, my intent is to use that form to inform the substantive discussion and specifies a date in the very near future for posting that form to everyone. So if it's all right with you, we'll let it go for the triage report but include it in the substantive discussion. So I hope that's acceptable. And I think there's a logic to it, because as everyone, even though I agree with you completely that it's a straightforward exercise and something we should definitely do. On the other hand, you know, given the discussion of last week, that discussion of data elements should come right behind the discussion of purposes. So I see it in, you know, time for that. So I missed your intent, and I apologize for that. Hi, Mark. How are you today?
Well, just to clarify, sorry, the reason I proposed it having a triage report is that my understanding of the triage report is that you were basically telling the board where we have consensus and where we, in terms of the temp spec, and it would be, again, critical to know how far apart we are on these data elements. I would still support it being in the triage report if we could get it in.
All right. Thanks very much. And we've lost Mark. So should we just sort of whistle in place? So, Diane, I see your comment about Margie's point, and I just want to reiterate that my comments were, you know, even though they were made before Margie's comments, were not intended to disagree with them. I agree with them. All right, so we'll stick a pin in this and wait for Mark and go on to the next thing. Review of the project plan. So one tool we used to build the project plan was a categorization or a prioritization of each of the sections in the temporary specification. So you can see here we I'm not going to be able to make out the font, so I've got to get out my piece of paper. So you can see that we've divided them into four sections. One category where sections were, we think, directly affected by advice from the privacy board that came in after the writing of the temp spec, so where we might have some good guidance on specific changes. Two sections of the temporary specification where the team indicated pretty clearly in the triage portion that, you know, an amendment is desirable, and that's really broke into two sections. One is the more important one where change is required to bring the section into compliance with the GDPR, and others where the temporary specification is just kind of clumsily written and can be brought into compliance and not expected to impact compliance, so not as quite as high as a priority. And finally, there's items where we expect, you know, where there's already things in operation, so we expect little or no change. And then there's some background rationale and justification. So these categorizations were meant to inform about how long we might spend on each item. So you know, some of the more complex or urgent items, we set aside a couple or three meetings discussion, where others maybe we can do some of the work online or offline or however you want to put it, and then come in for a conclusory statement at the end, and I'll talk some more about that. So we're going to pause this and welcome Mark back. Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson, can you hear me okay?
Sure. You're back.
Great. Apologies for that. So jumping back to the triage document, the registry stakeholder group submitted, you know, fairly extensive comments on that. And I guess, you know, there's just a couple things I want to highlight here on the call. And that's, you know, first, you know, we have concerns with the triage document, you know, as it's written, and we've highlighted those in our feedback. But we also think it's important that we go on to the substantive discussions of, you know, of phase two. And so, you know, while we do think the triage report needs work before it's to the state that we're comfortable submitting it to the GNSO Council, we want to encourage this group to address those changes offline rather than take up valuable meeting time talking about that. So there definitely needs to be a balance there between addressing the triage report and getting on to the substantive discussions in phase two. But you know, it is I guess I encourage people to read the comments we submitted, you know, and note our concerns. But also, you know, when you were giving your overview, you know, you suggested that maybe the report be updated to be more high level and be, you know, just a pure triage. Quick chat with my colleagues suggests that, you know, registries would be supportive of that approach and take a more high level traditional triage look to the triage report. So thank you.
Thanks for your comments, Mark. And your spurt of getting the triage report done. So this is the issue categorization, and here's a project plan, and Barry from our team's done several different versions of this. We've done Gantt charts and this kind of clumsy spreadsheet, and some other forms. So a wise man once told me, you can't schedule inspiration, but you can make inspirational schedules. And the high-level approach here is to take up, you know, starting with today, but really next meeting, take up two fairly substantive, topics each meeting. So that leaves about 45 minutes for each topic. And, you know, I kind of wrestled with whether to just discuss one topic or two. And I thought two would be better because if we sort of auger in on an issue or get stalled, you know, we have a backup. And often in, you know, if we say we allocate like 45 minutes to each discussion, then, you know, you kind of have a sense whether you're heading toward a resolution or heading towards something where we need to do some work between meetings to sort of move the issue forward. So I personally thought it was better to schedule two topics for each meeting. And, you know, and you can see that, you know, some of the topics stretch across three meetings, some stretch across two. And then, you know, we have the LA meetings at the in a few weeks, where we'll lay in, you know, these topics if they're not settled yet, and attempt to bring those to closure at those meetings. And then another thing I want to point out here is that there's another column to this chart that talks about work we would do offline or not on the call. So one point is that in preparation for the redacted data set discussions that's coming up in the next couple of weeks, I had planned to release the redacted. I hear myself. Somebody has to mute. So the redacted data set survey to be sent out a couple, you know, a week or so, a week and a half before that discussion. And then, you know, there's also an idea to discuss some of the topics, you know, online or offline. One is the one Mark just talked about, and I just talked about the triage report, settling that. And then, you know, we asked, and maybe we didn't ask too clearly or give you a good tool, but
the triage report.
Wow. So those were the appendices having to do with URS, UDRP, and transfers. So, when we talk about them in the triage report, we really – I'm just going to knock these things off right now rather than look at different slides. So we thought those were areas where – you know, they're already in operation. We thought there'd be little or no change to them. So I don't know if we need to, you know, sit and discuss it at a meeting or if there are changes that are desired, you know, especially by those guys that are executing on these things. You know, I'm not sure why they couldn't be submitted via email to this group. Or, you know, we'll create some sort of document either through Google Docs or the Wiki or something like that where they can be amended. So, you know, we didn't get any response to our request for any comments or changes to these appendices. So I'm going to reiterate that request and work with the support team to provide you an easier method for providing input on these. So, I'm just going to pause here and see if this sort of project plan is what people envisioned about how to go about this, or if there are any comments. And, you know, certainly you've only seen this for a short period of time. So I'm an old project planner. So Barry, who's done almost all the work on this, and I would welcome discussing with any of you, you know, project planning techniques and how you might approach this. While I'm waiting to see if anybody wants to comment, I'll just say that, you know, the first thing you notice about a project plan is things just like a battle, things turn to heck right away, right? So we'll have to be somewhat nimble in deciding, you know, whether to extend the topic beyond the 45-minute schedule because it looks like we're zeroing in on consensus, or if we don't get something done, whether we just pend it out to the face-to-face meeting, or we create another session in the next meeting and push everything back. So, you know, you'll see this project plan probably changing in 24 hours' time. Hi, Thomas. How are you? Thanks for being here. Go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. Hi, everyone. Now, I think that we should definitely give this project plan a try. I'm just uncertain whether we can discuss purposes in isolation without actually knowing the broader maze of data processing. I think we've discussed this a little bit earlier, but we actually need to slice and dice the data processing. We need to look at all that data elements through the entire life cycle. And there might be a different purpose for collecting the data by the registrar, then there might be a purpose for the transfer from registrar registry, and there might be yet another purpose for retaining the data for a specific period of time. So I'm not sure whether we are actually capable of keeping that level of abstraction when trying to discuss purposes. An alternative way would be to look at the life cycle and start with the collection of data and then look at what is the data collected for and look at the different legal bases, which would be 61B, 61F, and 61A. And then, you know, we could hopefully make some quick wins and agree on certain data subjects being required for certain purposes to fulfill vis-a-vis the registrant, and, you know, take it from there and generate a list of lawful purposes as we go through the whole life cycle of the various data elements. So I hope this makes sense. I'm happy to elaborate more should there be any questions.
Yeah, so thanks, Thomas. And sadly for you all, I have a number of slides to talk about an approach for purposes to access that I can tell already doesn't you know, line up with what Thomas just proposed. So I recommend that we hit those slides and go through them, and then I think that would be a good time, Thomas, for you to elaborate. I appreciate Milton's comment about the project plan is never conforms to reality. Yeah, well, it won't in a couple weeks. Okay, so Milton.
Yeah, if we are indeed moving on to discussion of purposes, I think there's a fundamental mistake in the way that's being conceptualized. Again, the understanding of data protection law is that the purpose is the purpose of the person who is collecting data, and then there's purposes for distributing it or disclosing it. But the discussion of purpose fundamentally has to be rooted in ICANN's purpose for collecting it in the first place. So if we're just talking about purposes for access, then we have illegitimately biased the discussion. We're talking about essentially why people want it. And there's, as we know, there's 600,000 reasons why someone might want to have access to the data. What we need to be discussing is how the collection and storage and disclosure of that data is related to ICANN's purposes. Can we agree on that?
So let me, I don't know if I'm allowed to say I agree to anything, so I've been upgraded for that. So let me go through these slides. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at them yet and are making the comments based on that you've already reviewed the slides and found them not to meet what you think. But let's do that, and then Thank you, Benedict. And then see that that comports with what you're saying. So here's some background, and actually I'll say that these next few slides are shortened, and staff did, the support team did quite a bit of work putting together some preliminary materials. And Marika and everyone, I'm thinking that, you know, since I edited some of this material out, maybe we just create a one-pager out of the next few slides that includes the background material and privacy board advice and such that you included in more rich detail, and we could distribute that as kind of, you know, or put it up on the wiki as kind of a background document. But, you know, the background that you know is that registration data may be processed on the basis of legitimate interests not overridden by fundamental rights and freedom of individuals. And then the temporary spec goes on to define registration data because somehow the GDPR didn't do that. No, sarcasm. And then, but the GDPR does define personal information as any identifiable natural person who can be identified by reference to an identifier such as a name, an identification number, location data, online identifier, and so on. So that's background information for you. So the policy board advice that came in, and this is an abbreviated version. sorry, excuse me. You know, there, as I think this might be related to what Mel said, but, you know, processing activities are determined by ICANN, for which ICANN and the registries and registrars through contracts with ICANN require their own legal basis, essentially performance of a contract and some other things. And then there are processing activities determined by third parties, which require their own legal basis. So the Privacy Board went on to say, ICANN should not take care not to conflate its own purposes with the interests of third parties. And then it said that data in a separate paragraph said that of the letter said data legitimately collected by ICANN registrars and registries doesn't exclude the subsequent disclosure of personal data to third parties for their own legitimate interest. And of the most important points they made, the fourth one is that personal data can be disclosed for the purposes of legitimate interests of third parties, provided those interests are not overridden by the interests or fundamental rights of data subjects. So very briefly, for your background, that was the gister gravamen of the policy advice. So given all that, I want to try to do sort of a build on how we should think about this and go forward. And so these next few slides are a build. So when we get to that, you don't need to stop for questions because when we get to the last one, then all the information will be on the same slide. So data processing includes more steps than this, but there's data collection, you know, you could say by ICANN, but by registrars through their contract with ICANN, and then that data is used by the registrars to administer to their registrants and make sure the contracted for services are applied, and also to comply with the ICANN contracts. Which includes, I think, URS, UDRP transfers and other things. So data is collected and then used by registrars for these purposes. And then data is also disclosed to third parties and for use. That is disclosed to others for use by third parties. So there's more to data processing than this. There's the eventual deletion of data and other steps. So I realize this is an oversimplification, but I think those are the three processing steps we're concerned with regard to purposes for processing data. Well, I shouldn't have talked so much. So, you know, those first two bullets are processing activities determined by ICANN, requiring their own legal basis, and then from the bullets above, the disclosure to third parties are processing activities requiring their own legal basis, such as having a legitimate interest that is not overcome by the rights of private individuals. So data collected by registrars should be limited to the data necessary to provide the services bargained for, to make sure the domain names work and last a long time and stack neatly, and you know, any of the services required by contract. I think Margie brought that up in the last meeting, that should be included, and it certainly is. And then the registrar, you know, uses that information to provide those services and to comply with the contractual requirements or the policy requirements. So for me, in the temporary specification, since you have that out on your left-hand side, unless you're left-handed, those are the temporary specs, and we'll get it. You don't have to look it up right now, but to me, those are the temporary specification sections, you know, 4.1, 4.4.1, 0.3, 2.7, 0.11, and 0.12, and also the appendices having to do with URS, UDRP, and transfers. And then my slides get a little bit messy, but I'll explain to you what I mean here. I was talking to Rafiq before the meeting, going through the slides, and he pointed out this is a little awkward, but, you know, for data to be disclosed to a and for use by a third party, first there has to be a legitimate purpose and then not overcome by individual rights. And, you know, this is a question I have for you guys, but a couple of meetings ago it was brought up that GDPR provides that law enforcement can have access to and use data as a third party without doing that balancing of being overcome by individual rights. So that's why I have that branch off there, and that's section 4.4.9 of the temporary spec. And then where that balancing occurs, that's called out in section 4.4.8 of the temporary specification for consumer protection, investigation of cybercrime, DNS abuse, intellectual property protections, other things. And then, you know, another question I have for this group is, does ICANN contractual compliance fit into this bucket as a third party, or, you know, maybe it goes under the contractual, you know, performance of a contract thing. So this is how I sort of laid this out. And then, you know, what we're going to talk about today is the purposes for data. And so those are, you know, the 4.4.x sections of the temporary specification, either uses to provide services that are bargained for or required by contract. So services by contract, I think I'm correct here, but I'm not the expert, don't require that balancing. Because they're required by contract. And then where third parties use them, they have to be a legitimate interest and not overcome by individual rights. So I want to the next couple slides lay out those sections in more detail and kind of put them under these various headings. And then, you know, just to get the discussion started, I have a proposed way to think about this, but we can think about it anyway you wish. So I'll pause because this is a, you know, sort of the close of the little pictorial, and see if there are any comments about this as a way to display the uses of data. Hi, Ashley. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? I'm happy to go into greater detail later, but I think one overarching concern of the GAC is that there's only a reference to LEA, when in reality it should be public LEA and other public authorities. At least that's consistent with the GDPR, because there's other government users besides LEA, and that's noted in the GDPR. And also, and I think you touched on this to a certain extent, but there's actually like two avenues for LEA. There's, I'm sorry, and other public authorities. which is legitimate purpose, but also and performing their task. That's noted in the GDPR under the lawful purposes. So I'm happy to raise this again once we get to the text, but I just wanted to raise it in the context of how it's presented here visually as well. Thank you.
Can, I see Benedict, you're next, but can anybody, is there any discussion of those points, especially, well, either of those points? I'll, I'm going to get a drink of water and ask, so Ashley, those are good comments and taken on board. Benedict?
Yeah, I was going to follow up with Ashley on Ashley's points. We've used some language like court of competent jurisdiction in some ICANN policies, and the reason to do that and not just blanket LEA is because it means we can, it gives the registries and registrars some ability to push back on requests that they deem not compliant with human rights law. For example, if somebody wanted to refuse a request from a state that bans freedom of speech in some sense, or seeks information on its activists. So it's good to have some sort of gating in there and not broadly about LEA. And the other thing I think we ought to consider here is jurisdiction of LEA, and I think call out specifically that these refer to cross-jurisdictional requests, because, as I think I said already, LEA has its own methods in jurisdiction. So we should particularly call that out, but controlled by the Court of Competent Jurisdiction language. So there's some protections in there.
It'd be great to hear from a registrar about handling those. Alex? Thank you, Benedict.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. It's Alex. Yeah, I just wanted to say I think this is a nice framework. I like how this is laid out, and it makes sense to me. I think it also addresses the comments that Thomas made earlier about that we need to kind of slice and dice this by collection, by use, by disclosure, and the like. In addition, I think it addresses the issue that Milton raised also, that this isn't just about access; it's about different types of processing. The one comment I will make though is I think it does leave out some purposes, some of the purposes listed in section Article 6.1 of the GDPR. So I think we may want to ensure that those are covered. And while I'm at it, I think contract compliance should fall under the legitimate purpose column there underneath LEA. Thanks.
Just taking a note. Thanks, Alex. Diane, how are you? Diane, we're not hearing you.
Diane, this is Terry. I don't see where you've activated your microphone, and I don't see where you've joined on the telephone. So to activate your microphone on the top toolbar, select the telephone icon and follow the prompt.
Did you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Perfect timing.
I was just wanting to raise the point that the slide is somewhat confusing in that the data processing section comes listing the registrar and RGGI data collection purposes prior to setting out the ICANN purposes. So in my opinion, I think that it has to be somewhat almost switching around the columns, because it's really set, it should be setting out ICANN's purpose for collecting the information, which should include the specified purposes. And then there should be the ability to set forth the purposes of the registries and registrars to be able to use those purposes, because the GDPR is very clear that a controller has the ability in identifying a specific purpose to do that on behalf and in connection with a third-party interest, including intellectual property protection, consumer protection, et cetera.
Thanks, Diane. You know, Thomas and I chatted about, just for transparency, you know, I had some questions about GDPR and the interpretation of it. And so he might be able to better respond to that, your thoughtful comment, better than I. And he's next in the queue, too. So, Thomas, I don't know if you want to respond to Diane's comment or have a separate comment.
In fact, I had an additional point to make. And on the left-hand side, it says limited to the data necessary to provide services bargained and required by contract. I think it's worthwhile specifying what we mean by contract, because in the discussion, sometimes the RRA and the RA are also brought to the table. And when it comes to determining what's required to perform the contract, this is just about the contract between the registrar and the registrant or the data subject. Also, I think just in order to get the demarcation clear, it would be valuable to also mention that the registrars are collecting data on the account holder, because in the list of purposes in the temp spec, we have something like invoicing purposes. And I think this is correct, invoicing is done to the account holder. And therefore, I'm not sure whether it's appropriate for an ICANN policy to govern how registrars and by which means the registrars collect data points to invoice their account holders or customers. Because I think what this policy should be dealing with is solely the registration data as it is relevant for keeping up registrations in the GTLD world and all the players in the ICANN arena. Thank you.
So thank you, Thomas. So I have one question and one point. So, you know, you talked about one governing contract being between the registrar and registrar. Grant, but I think you were alluding to other contracts. So would is that the RA or the RRA or both of those or other contracts? And my second, yeah. So go ahead, because my other thing is.
Well, I heard references to both these documents, and specifically when it came to what data needs to be publicized. In the past, not in this group, but in the past during the discussions, the point was made that publication of data must be possible because it is required by the RAA and the RA to collect and make available certain data. And I think we just need to be very clear also when it comes to the purpose discussion and the legal basis. We have to look at the contractual relationship subject and the registrar or potentially the registry. But these can also include and govern third-party interests. So thing is possible if ICANN's interests are concerned or even third-party's interests are concerned if this passes the 6.1F GDPR weighing exercise, right? So I think the only point that I'm making at this point is that when we're talking about contract, we need to be very clear what contractual relationship we're discussing, and then we can look at what data needs to be processed to fulfill that contract, and what additional interests might there be, and can those be subsumed either under the contract or explained legally through 6.1F. I hope this makes sense.
Yes, thanks very much, Thomas. I think the point I wanted to make about, your differentiation of the account holder information is, and maybe we should wait, and there's a couple more slides that kind of point to those kind of issues where, points made during the triage discussion were characterizations of some of these temporary specification sections were probably not stated well enough and should be changed in some way. And I don't have a recommendation for a change, but I have a recommendation that we talk about that very issue. So as soon as we get through this set of comments, we'll go on to the last couple slides and start that discussion in earnest. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Perfect. Great. So I have many thoughts on this, but I'm going to try and limit myself to two ones that are particularly important to me from listening to this conversation. The first one is specifically with regard to who are the parties here that we are trying to identify and trying to help basically in the processing of data. And, the consensus policy and scope of the actual temporary spec in which we are hopefully ultimately going to make into the consensus policy specifically limits that to the GTLD registry operators and the ICANN accredited registrars. So we are looking to the purposes of registries and the registrars. And an awful lot of the conversations that we have are bringing it into the purposes that ICANN has. Now, we haven't had the discussion as to the joint controllership, the individual controllership, of these particular phases, but we cannot conflate, number one, ICANN's purposes and the registries and the registrar's purposes for the processing of that information. That is a very important thing because our purposes are effectively quite different, and that has a huge effect down the line. So for things such as, and I don't want to get into this conversation now because this is not where the conversation, this is where we will be at the point in the future. But ICANN's purposes are more so with regards to things such as with regards to the IPC and the intellectual property interest. Sorry, somebody is beeping in the background.
That's what I have. I have that sound made anytime anybody's critical of my work.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. No, it's not that. It's just, I just want to be clear.
No, that was just a joke. I'm like taking notes as fast as I can, so keep going.
Oh, that's fine. So when we're talking about, and I think it was Diane that said, we need to bring in ICANN's purposes as to why they collect the data. And, I mean, from my initial point of view, and that was the moment I decided to put my hand at this early point, is because ICANN are not collecting the data in this instance, and ICANN's purposes are the purposes that are then passed through via the ORA and via the ORA to us. And, then we also have the purpose via that contract in order to follow through on ICANN's purposes. But that is through the contract that we then have to follow the purposes that ICANN has specified that we are responsible for as joint controllers. And this is a whole other area, but that is, unfortunately, we have a picket fence issue there as far as I'm concerned. So that was kind of the one thing there. Also, we keep talking about the legitimate purpose of the LEAs and that the LEA's legitimate purpose is not under the Balancing Act. Yes, under the 6F, there is no balancing on that one. However, as I think as Ashley pointed out quite rightly, that there are other bases under which the LEA could have access, and there are other legal requirements which LEAs and public authorities will have to go through. They have their other requirements that are not just limited to Article 8 privacy rights. They are limited to the whole spectrum of human rights. So it would be pointless to put every list of that within the text of something like the GDPR. They have their own things that they need to look after, but they would be using different things, such as in the vital interests of the data subject, or such as the public interest one under 6.1e, where they would be able to link directly to European law, they'd be able to directly link to member state law and rely upon that. But it's not the legitimate purpose of the registry. It is their legitimate purpose of asking it from the registry. And we have to be very clear, again, in this whole legitimate purpose conversation that they are separate concepts and we're conflating an awful lot of them. And in fact, we're doing exactly what the European Data Protection Board has said, where we should not be conflating the purposes of ICANN registries, registrars, and that of third parties. I just think that we were kind of slipping down a very slippery slope there, and I felt moved to speak. So apologies that it's probably the wrong time to say it, but I just needed to probably cut that off at this particular point, or not cut it off, but put in my two cents of that one. I think it's a valuable conversation, but it is something that we're going to have a lot of discussion on, I would expect.
So Alan, so maybe I'm not understanding you. So in this slide where there's the legitimate purpose, you know, I guess I'm not understanding you, because that legitimate purpose would be the legitimate purpose of law enforcement, or I forgot what Ashley said, but I have to flip back a couple pages in notes, but other authorities, and it's the legitimate purpose of the third parties. So that's very clear to me that that's different from the legitimate purpose of those collecting the data, such as registrars or registries. So I think I missed your point, and I know people are kind of, I'm getting messages to move things along, but thanks, Benedict. But I think this takes your point into account, but so I'm missing something somewhere.
Yeah, apologies. Again, this is a very in-depth, I suppose, discussion with regards to what legitimate purposes specifically are. But generally speaking, the legitimate purposes are not the legitimate purpose of a third party. It's the legitimate purpose of the controller. So in this instance, say, it would be the legitimate purpose of the registry. There are derogations where you can take into account separate legitimate purposes that maybe a law enforcement agency would have in requesting that, or indeed an IP organization would have in requesting that data. But the legitimate purpose for us as a registry must be related to the primary use and primary process reason for that data. And, you know, like calling a spade, the primary purpose for the registry and the registrar to collect that data is the registration of domain names, as far as I'm concerned, and the protection of our zone files. So, yes, a legitimate purpose may be established by a third party, and they may use that then to request it off the third party, but it is off the registry or registrar, but it is a completely separate legitimate purpose we're talking about there. I would probably encourage people to there was a full-on opinion paper, I think it was, I can't remember the citation, but it's 2014, and it refers to the 1995 directive, but it's from the Article 29 Working Party, and it does specifically talk about legitimate interest. You can put that on maybe a homework reading list, because it is very good, and it goes through specifically, you know, this whole concept of what is a legitimate purpose, and specifically, where does it apply to third parties? And I think we could all benefit probably from having a good view of that.
So I think the point you were making is what I was attempting to characterize in this slide. So, you know, I'll let you go and then try to rationalize that and maybe follow up in some other form. I see the agreements that with the points Alan made, and I think I agree with that. So I want to go on to the next couple of slides. So Margie, can you make your comment, and then we'll see if we need discussion on that, and then we'll go ahead.
Sure, Kurt. This is Margie. I disagree with Alan. I think his view of what the contract and registration process is extremely narrow, so I wouldn't assume that the rest of the team agrees with that. But the actual reason I raised my hand was that I think this slide leaves out a lot of detail and makes assumptions that's not consistent with GDPR. So, for example, there are other purposes that are not listed on this slide, and so I just want to make sure we don't use this as the, you know, the Bible, if you will, of what GDPR, how it applies to the situation. You've missed out, for example, performance of contract, consent as grounds. And the performance of contract comes into play in with respect to whether or not there's this balancing test of whether the access for the legitimate purpose is overcome by the individual right. And so, for example, in 4.48, where you've got intellectual property down there, it would be my view that balancing test doesn't apply, for example, to accessing data for the UDRP. The UDRP is a contract requirement in the registration agreement and all the way through all the contracts. And so if someone needs access for data for the UDRP, the balancing test would not apply. So I urge staff to redo this slide, or at least not make the impression that it is comprehensive of all the grounds that apply under GDPR.
So one response I have, Margie, is that this slide attempts to be comprehensive in listing all the purposes that are in this temporary specification, but one of our acts is to determine if there's additional purposes. So it's not intended to be comprehensive from that point. And two is just to ask from the group if there's a response to Margie and the fact that one of the reasons that registrars and registries collect data are to support URS, UDRP, and transfers, and then use that, process that data. So I think that's included, and I didn't take that up with Alan when he brought it up. Right. So I agree with I agree with Milton that that's what Margie's saying, and go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. The way I look at it is, throughout the contractual framework that ICANN sets up, one of the critical things that need to be performed under this contract is the ability to resolve disputes under the UDRP. So that is a performance of contract issue, and that's a separate ground apart from the balancing test that applies to the legitimate purposes. It's a completely separate ground.
Right. Thanks, Margie. And Milton, to answer your question, I don't think it's a matter of the data being different. I think it's a matter of that the data can be disclosed in as part of the way to facilitate UDRP or URS, without going through balancing. It's just the execution of a contract.
Right, and the reason I bring it up is because the chart makes it seem like that in order to provide the data for a UDRP, you have to do the balancing test, and that is incorrect.
I see what you're saying. I understand. Thanks, Margie. I see where that could be interpreted that way. All right. So to make things a little more, Thomas, last comment on the slide.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Kurt. And sorry for getting in the queue again on this point, but Margie made me want to get back into the queue. I think what we should do for each and every processing activity, do the test of 6.1b first. Is the data required to perform the contract? Or, in other words, what data processing is required to perform the contract? The beauty of 6.1b is that you neither need a balancing exercise, nor do you need the user's consent, right? So that's the lowest burden legal requirement to be compliant with. Then we should move to checking whether we can deploy 6.1f. You do have to do the balancing exercise, but you don't need the registrant or the data subject to weigh in. And then, once we've looked at what data processing we can legitimize with 6.1f, then finally we should go to 6.1a and see whether there's any processing required based on consent, because that's what we need the user for, or the data subject for. And then in rare occasions, such as disclosure to law enforcement, we might need 6.1c. But as we move through all the various processing activities, my recommendation would be that we move from 6.1b to 6.1f to 6.1a. Thank you.
And Kurt, if I could reply, I think Thomas's approach makes sense, actually. I think that makes a lot of a good use of our time.
Yeah. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Margie. So we might come back to this slide because I'd rather have this up maybe than the next slide. So I'm going to flip through, I think, the next four slides. So this is a listing of each of the purposes that are enumerated in the temporary specification, and purposes are kind of purposes as pursued by either registrars, registries, or ICANN, or third parties, and where third parties are involved, then you know, the tiny, tiny font at the bottom indicates that balancing test, and I'll bring that up later. So you'll notice that you know, I have there is under, not I, that under 4.4.12 near the bottom, dispute resolution services, that says you know, pursued by, you know, that the data is pursued by registrars, registries, and ICANN, but I take on board the point that that data needs to be disclosed to others for those dispute resolution services to work. And so you know, There's no balancing test indicated there because of the registrar pursuit, but the fact that it has to be disclosed to third parties, given what Margie and then Thomas have said, that there's probably not that balancing required for that. So I took those I parsed those between you know, registrar registry purposes and third-party purposes. And I'm going to suggest, you know, a way to pursue these on a very high level, but, you know, I'm embracing Thomas's categorization of these rather than registry, registrar, and third-party purposes. Maybe, you know, we divide this up between six. I can't believe I'm quoting the GDPR section. See, I've come far. But 61B, 61F, and then maybe 61C. Maybe divide them that way. And so then for each of these, you know, we get back to the charter questions, right? Are these purposes here valid and legitimate? And how do we answer that? So I think we go to Thomas's framework, but I have something else written here, so I'll talk about that, and then we can decide what to do. We can talk about the substance, and then do the purposes have a corresponding legal basis, and, you know, should there be others? So is this a comprehensive list, or should it be added to, and should any of these purposes be eliminated? And so I just have a couple slides, one about the registry, registrar contract purposes, and one for the third-party purposes. And you know, this is where it kind of got, you know, it's about 15 hours into the day. But so here's some high-level thinking on these. And so I want to, you know, talk about the, you know, a possible path forward for these registry, registrar uses of data. And so you know, maybe the way to look at these for, say, registrars, are, you know, are there any additional legitimate reasons why contracted parties collect data from registrants other than these? And then recalling our discussion in the triage portion of our work, you know, there were some issues raised with, for example, payment and invoicing, and that not being a totally appropriate area of our discussion. And Thomas mentioned that earlier about the account holder information being somewhat separate, and there's this alluding to zone file data. So this is where contracted parties input, I think, would be of primary importance. You know, should we regroup or in some better way capture the relevance of these data sets? You know, how you're, how I think like Alan said, how these are primarily for supporting the registrant and the resolution of the domain name. And in addition to dispute resolution services that Margie brought up, but should we regroup or relabel these in some way that make them more germane to the actual purposes? So so long as we can create these purposes so that we can next, in the next step, identify which data are collected, then our definition of purposes, I think, meets our necessary requirements. So, you know, should these be regrouped in some way and reworded? And then once we have those purposes, then go on to the next step of listing and consolidate, you know, listing the data required under each one and consolidating that into an additional list. And, I know that I've been through some of the RDS working group work, and I know quite a bit of work was already done on this where all that data was collected. So I think we could just steal from them. So that's sort of my thinking there. And then, you know, it's for third-party purposes, you know, I've listed the third-party purposes that are listed in the temporary specification. And so the questions to be answered, you know, are the purposes, are these purposes for, you know, in our discussion, valid and legitimate? Do they have a corresponding legal basis? And that, you know, that kind of means, you know, does the party requesting the data have a legitimate interest, provided that appropriate safeguards in place and the disclosure is disproportionate and limited to what's necessary? And other GDPR requirements are met, which I think is the balancing test. So, you know, for us going forward on this, I think we, you know, in order to describe this as a legitimate purpose, we need to define or instances or identify instances where personal data can be made under these conditions. So personal data might not be made under all instances for each one of these, but can be made for instances where the need for the data rises to the occasion of all of these items. And once agreed, then describe the data elements that are required for disclosure here. And so we'll have, at the end of that, we should have, you know, a list of purposes that are valid and legitimate, and then the data elements for each. And then that addresses, I think, how the preliminary or the temporary specification is laid out. And then the exact methodology for how that's done in a consistent industry-wide way can be detailed out when we talk about the access discussion. So I see we have a comment from the from Alex and from Theo, and so, you know, I'll take these two comments. Well, so is it possible for us to, like, talk about, you know, the registry data collection first and then the third-party purposes second, and sort of allocate 15 or 20 minutes or so to each and see where we are? Is that, if that's possible, I'll go back to the back to the registrar one. Yeah, I'm going to just say that. So we'll go back to the registrar or registry one and take comments on that or any other slide we've seen. So Alex, do you want to comment on the registrar one, or do you want to wait for a few minutes and then talk about the other one, or make an overall comment about the last four or dozen slides?
Right. Well, I had a question. This is Alex. I'm just curious as to why ICANN contractual compliance is a third party, is listed under third parties. As ICANN is a controller, it would seem to me that they wouldn't be a third party. So I was just hoping for some clarification as to why that ended up on the next slide and not on this slide.
Yeah, and that was, I had them there in the chart too, and then you know, questioned myself when I went through the chart, and so I'm you know, and if this is a definitional issue, that's very clear in the GDPR and any other writings. I'm happy to move them. Somebody suggested they be moved under LEA because the balancing is not required and they have a legitimate interest. And now you're suggesting that they be moved under the contractual requirements. So I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'd be fine with any characterization of where they are. And I see Alan's agreed with you.
Yeah, I think this is Alex again, just to clarify. I think I was the one who wrote that it should be moved in that previous slide, but not under LEA or not associated with LEA, but just in that general category that LEA was in. So I think
right.
I think my comment is consistent here. I think as ICANN as a controller, just the, you know, putting ICANN compliance as a third party just doesn't make any sense to me at least. So I think it is better to place it on this slide here. Under registrar registry, ICANN contract purposes. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Alex. And I just want to pause for a second, Theo, and talk about Stephanie's comment for a section. So, you know, I'm kind of the same opinion, but registrars, you know, ICANN's another part of ICANN's mission, I think, is to support the registry registrar marketplace. So, you know, I don't know if ICANN should be listed under that or not, but I agree with that. Theo?
Thanks, Kurt. So, looking at this possible path forward, it's sort of, yeah, I'm not sure if this is the way to go. It seems very complex what we are doing here, and it ties a little bit back on what Alex just mentioned when it comes to contractual compliance as a third party, because we are already having a very difficult time determining the purposes here. And when I'm looking at this, and this is a little bit of an exercise, you know, what is the purpose of a domain name registration? I mean, that is your initial purpose for the registrant. The registrant wants to register a domain name. Does the registrar require data? And that is the initial first purpose. Does the data need to go to the registry? Could be. We could make some purposes there, come up with a couple of purposes. But there needs to be a legitimate basis there. So, if we want to move data to a registry, we need to have a purpose there. If you want to get data to compliance because they have audit functions, okay, that's another purpose. So I can go on here with possibly 1,000 purposes here, and we can possibly come up with legitimate purposes here and have a legal rationale to justify it all, but that is going to be a very long project, and I think we need to go a little bit back to the core of why we are doing these domain name registrations, why it is the purpose for the registrant slash data subject, and then see if all these other purposes can be dealt in another fashion, because if we are going to continue on this path, I think it's going to be very, very complex, and I'm not sure if we're going to be hitting our deadlines. Thanks.
So thanks, Theo. So to me, So to me, each of these items, except for 4.4.12, have to do with the registration of a domain name and the maintenance of a domain name and, you know, making sure it works good and lasts a long time. And the 4.4.12 has to do with the ICANN consensus policies of UDRP and transfers. And just to rub people the wrong way, they may be de facto policy of URS, but it's not a policy. So to me, that's what this list is, and that all the other things you mentioned are to transfer data, to make available data to third parties for their use, which requires one of the other GDPR sections that Thomas describes. So I kind of think we're lockstep, but I'm certainly sensitive to, you know, making this a very onerous task. And in fact, I'm trying to oversimplify it and concerned with that. So with that, James?
Hi, it's James. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, it's James. Can you hear me? Okay, great. Sorry, I'm at an airport and there's a lot of background noise, so I apologize for that. So just a question here, and it's possible that I've lost the handle on this particular slide, but I think we might be making the same mistake that that the RDS working group made on several occasions, which is that we are kind of backing into legitimacy of purpose, in that we have some things here we've outlined that the contract outlines specific data fields that we collect them for specific purposes. But I think that includes this assumption that there is no other data or no other means for us to fulfill these needs without this data. And since this specification and this PDP is focused, I think, specifically on the RDS aspects of the temporary spec, I'm concerned that we're kind of trying to take on a little bit too much here when we talk about payments and invoicing and technical issues and commercial and technical changes, because we have other means where we could perhaps look at facilitating those contractual purposes without diving into what we collect, what we share, and what we display. And I think that's my concern. I don't know if this is what Theo is getting at. I'm just concerned that we're taking on too much and that we should instead just focus on the essential elements of the temp spec. Thanks.
No, so you can't go, James. So I was going to ask a different question, but when you said focus on the essential elements of the temp spec, what's your vision? What pops into your mind when you say that? James, are you still there? So maybe another contracted party can pick up the thread, but I think that's what. So I think I grasped James' issue, and what I was proposing was, to the extent we want to, you know, blowing up these eight or so purposes and simplifying them into, you know, the data necessary to, support the registrar and execute on the agreement, and then identify those data elements. So there's a whole other topic going on in chat though that I don't want to take up on, but how would registrars in the temporary specification characterize their purpose for collecting data? Yeah, because I agree this isn't, you know, if the registrars are saying this isn't the correct characterization because there's other ways of collecting the data, and it's the contract that requires the publication or the collection of certain other data. I get that. So for this temporary specification, you know, we want to collect the data necessary and list those purposes here. Go ahead, DL, please.
Thanks, Kurt. So maybe we are making this, and again, I think we are making it a little bit too complex here, and we are deviating from the original purpose, what is required for domain name registration. If I lend you out my car, Kurt, we can put it in a contract, and then you're allowed to drive my car around for, say, we agree 2 weeks because we want to have a time limit on how long you can rent it. But you can't rent it out to another person. You cannot rent out my car to another person without my consent. And I think that is basically what we are doing when we register a domain name. We use a set of data for a single purpose, domain name registrations. Every other purpose we come up with needs there either the data subject needs to be consenting to it, there needs to be a legitimate reason for it, or it needs to be informed, but there are several actions that are required to get to that point that we can reuse that data for another purpose. And I think that discussion is very complex. And I think that is sort of what the RDS also had trouble with. We have a good sense of purposes which make sense. I mean, LEAs, copyright, trademarks, et cetera, that there's no discussion about it. But to get to that point and to have that discussion crystal clear, that is a very tough one. And I'm afraid if we're going to conflate all these purposes here, we do not meet the finish line here. And that is May 25th, 2019. Thanks.
So how under the in the temporary specification, it lists a number of contract purposes for contracted parties to collect data. And so how would, for the purpose of the temporary specification, how would you reword those purposes in a simple way to so that we can identify the data required, the data that must be collected, right? We have this temporary specification. It says this. And now it's up for us to decide whether these purposes are legitimate, in performance of a contract, or they should be characterized in some other way. So how do we get at that? We have to either say these purposes are good the way they're written, or they should be rewritten to, reflect the data that's so that we can collect the data that's actually needed. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Kurt. I think what might make it easier for all of us to go through this is actually create a chart of the data elements, registrant, name, address, organization, phone, fax, email, and then we'll go through the purposes listed here and double check whether we think that those are needed by the registrar to perform the contract. Then we do the same thing for the admin fee, for the tech fee, and for the billing fee. And then we might get to points where there's divergence inside the group, and then let's deal with that. And write up the rationale for why this is needed. And I think if we go through the purposes listed here and make sure that no purposes are forgotten, everyone should say if there's anything missing, then I think we have, we have a list of purposes and processing activities that can be checked against the legal grounds. right? And then we should look at, you know, what's the legal basis, and then who are actually serving with this? Is it the registrar's own interest? Is it a third-party interest? And then we can populate a table and see what data can be collected and what data can be can travel from registrar to registry and so on and so forth.
So collect the data in so create a data list. Thank you, Milton. Create a data list that's in line with these purposes that are enumerated here.
Exactly. I think for all processing steps, we should, you know, just a suggestion, I think it would make sense to have an Excel sheet or another table with all the data elements. And there are some more than I've actually listed. And then we can say, okay, does it be collected by the registrar? Then we look at the travel of that data from the registrar to the registry. And we can then determine what data needs to travel from the registrar to the registry to perform the contract. What can travel from the registrar to the registry to based on a legitimate interest? And what can potentially travel based on consent, right? But then, you know, I think we would probably have a subset of the data elements that have been registered, that have been collected by the registrar that remains to travel from the registrar to the registry. And then we can do the same exercise with escrow, Ebiro, ICANN compliance, and what have you.
Yep. So I've got that. And I, you know, I think we can, we've already collected information from the RDS PDP that that highlights that, so we can use that as our starting point. So my question is, and I'm going to go on to the next slide, is for registrars and registries, are you happy for these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 things, purposes, to be in the temporary specification, or would you recommend a different wording or parsing of the purposes? And so, you know, for the next discussion on this, I'd look for the registrars and registries to say, for, you know, are these purposes, the way they're written in the temporary specification, are fine, or we think they need to be changed. I don't think that it's going to really change the data fields that are required, but I think it is important to have this properly worded. So I want to go on to the next thanks, Barry. Go on to the third party purposes of data. So I'll call on Margie, and then we'll go on to the next thing and spend 50 minutes on those. Margie?
Yes, thank you, Kurt. If you're asking whether this is a complete list, registry contract purposes, then I would add an additional one that's not here, and that's to comply with ICANN policies. Because as part of the overall contract for registration, there's an agreement that the registrar's registries will comply with ICANN policies that are created through the consensus policy framework. That is an independent ground.
Margie, I didn't do that to you. Is Margie gone?
Could you hear me? Sorry.
Yeah.
Were you able to hear my point?
Yeah. Yeah. So and for me they're here, but you can tell me which ones are missing. So under 4.4.12, we have UDRP, which is a consensus policy, and URS also. And then, you know, I thought in 4.4.1, the ability of the registered name holder to exercise her or his rights, that's where I put the, you know, one of the rights being the right to transfer a domain name. But
I'm thinking it's not complete. You're right. Some of it's addressed for health. But I mean, we could also ask ICANN staff to go through the policies, but I would suspect there are some that aren't expressly listed there. So that's why I would add it as a separate standalone purpose.
Okay. Thanks. So if the support staff could take that on, that would be great. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Hi, Stephanie Perrin for the record. I don't want to continue this circular argument again and again, but Margie's point reminds me of it, so I'm going to. One of the principal purposes of data protection law is to reinforce the autonomy of the individual in unequal power relationships, right? And while the NCSG and the ALAC purport to represent the end user or individual in negotiations at ICANN, or otherwise known as the multi-stakeholder process, I can't say that we have been particularly successful because many of the policies that have emerged over the years, contracts, do not necessarily even include all the existing end user rights, such as data protection law. It hasn't until now. And there are other rights as well. So I think that, unfortunately, compliance with other policies cannot vitiate the rights of the user until we do a privacy impact assessment on them. A human rights impact assessment would be better, mind you, but at least for this exercise, it should be a privacy impact assessment to see in how many instances we have policies that, in fact, have not balanced the end user's rights appropriately. So I'm not suggesting we're going to be able to do that in this process, but I think it's kind of a marker I'd like to put down here. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Well, I have a couple thoughts on that I want to process more fully. All right. So for third party purposes, this was a little bit harder for me to parse, but I think the bottom line of what I'm proposing is that, we have these third-party purposes that are outlined in the specification, and there could be additional ones. And what we need as a team to agree with in order to include these in this is that what we need to do to include these is agree that there are instances where each one of these would a legitimate interest that is not overcome by the rights of individuals will occur. So it doesn't occur in every instance, but there are instances where it will occur. And then once agreed and it's identified as a legitimate third-party purpose, then go on during the access discussion to determine under what conditions, that data disclosure can be made. So that's a little vague, but I welcome comments. So go ahead, Milton.
Yes, this is Milton Mueller from the NCSG. So we will have to register the strongest dissent to 4.4.8 and 4.4.9 as we don't deny that those are, in fact, third parties. This is the problem with the temp spec, and this is a problem that exists in 4.2 and 4.3 as well, is that ICANN is redefining its mission unilaterally and in complete violation of its own bylaws. To include this all-embracing law enforcement support functions. And just to give you an idea as to why we don't like this, if you really wanted to have a framework in domain name registration to address, let's say, consumer protection issues or law enforcement needs, then it would be perfectly legitimate for ICANN to ask people for their bank account information or their national identity card information when you're registering a domain name. I mean, there's no argument that that would, in fact, facilitate those purposes. So these third-party purposes are really an act of complete confusion. We're still confusing ICANN's purposes and mission with the needs and interests, which may be indeed legitimate, of third parties who might at some point want to use the data that ICANN collects in the process of fulfilling its mission. ICANN is a coordinator and policymaker for the domain name system. It publishes, through the root, it puts people in touch with zone files that make domain names globally compatible. That's its basic mission. It's not an overall regulator of the Internet. And these 4.4.8 and 9 really get us into expansive territory that's completely outside of ICANN's mission, and we just have to see those things go.
Thanks, Milton. I think I won't comment. I'll let Alan comment.
Thank you. I think Milton's just identified the main point of contention, or certainly a main point of contention within this group. I strongly believe that ICANN is responsible, has a responsibility to ensure that the domain name system not only exists and is populated with information, but exists so that it can be used reliably. As a simple example, the technical contact information is necessary at times to identify who it is you need to speak to make sure things can work if they are not working properly. Without that, the DNS is rather a useless piece of infrastructure if it can't be trusted, if it can't be made to work, if problems can't be fixed. So I believe that is one of the purposes that is not listed in the temporary specification, and making sure that the DNS is kept operational, functional, trusted, I believe is part of ICANN's mission and should be included as one of the rationales, and it's one of the rationales that justifies third-party access. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Diane? Hi, Diane. I think you're still on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Great. I think that Milton continues to wrongfully identify the mission of ICANN as well as of PDP. The mission of ICANN is very clear in its bylaws, and that includes to be to provide a framework as a controller of information for domain name registration. And in application of the GDPR, it very, very clearly says that in ICANN, in identifying the specific purpose for the collection of data, then the fulfillment of that purpose by registrars and registries is separate and apart. And under the contract of these registrars and registries, including the application of ICANN policies, is what allows for the collection of that data. The fulfillment of the contract is one of the legal bases. And the EPDP has been set forth a mission not to reconfigure or question the mission of ICANN or question its bylaws, but simply to apply the GDPR, and the temporary specification clearly sets that out in Section 4.4 as well as in Appendix C.
Thanks, Diane. Benedict? And then I have a comment. I have a question for Milton that'll demonstrate my ignorance. But Benedict, can you go ahead?
Hi, Kurt. Quite apart from ICANN's mission, I would actually, I would actually argue that this could even be considered to be a first party as well as a third party purpose. If we look at the bylaws, it strikes me just pragmatically that law enforcement and cops are going to keep asking registries and registrars for such data. It's not going to go away. And thus it makes sense to have a framework here, just that there's a standard way to ask and answer those questions. And that and having a standard doesn't open the floodgates. If you put terms like court of competent jurisdiction in there, it gives registries and registrars permission to turn down egregious requests and not just answer them. If it's a free-for-all, in my experience, and I speak as a former cop, that's what us cops use and exploit to take advantage of sort of cracks in the system to get data. Because we push, right? Within the law, but we push. So a system that facilitates registries and state registrars saying, aha, no, here's what you get, and we've been told this by ICANN, or consensus policy, seems a good thing for privacy. Thank you.
Thanks, Benedict. So my oversimplification, Milton, this is really a question I want you to answer because it's something I don't understand. So if data is collected for the sole purpose of, maintaining the registration and, after an impact assessment decided to include compliance with ICANN policies. So if it's collected on those bases only, then isn't a third-party request for access to that data, once it meets the legitimate purpose that is not overcome by the rights of others, doesn't that satisfy the limited purpose for which ICANN is collecting data?
I'll go ahead and answer since the question is directed to me. So somebody needs to mute their mic. So, of course, I mean, that's the problem with – that's why people seem to be so confused about this distinction between third-party purposes and ICANN's. Look at the language here. You have listed under third-party purposes, but then 4.48 says that it's ICANN's purpose to support a framework to address blah, blah, blah. Okay, you understand the distinction? If ICANN collects a bunch of data that is useful for law enforcement, then or for dispute resolution, which, by the way, dispute resolution is part of ICANN's purpose, but let's suppose it's just law enforcement, and then law enforcement has a legal process for getting access to that data, I have no problem with that. You see, that's not what we're debating. What we are freaked out about is this idea that it's ICANN's purpose to support consumer protection, investigation of cybercrime, DNS abuse, and IP protection, which means that it could be, based on the literal interpretation of that as a purpose, it would be able to collect your identity card or your credit card information or any information that might be supportive of law enforcement activities. What would stop it? You tell me. What would stop it from collecting your driver's license, a digital scan of your driver's license, if 4.8 actually and 4.9 actually describe its purpose in collecting data? What would stop it?
And Kurt, this is Carrie. If you're speaking, it looks like you're still muted.
Sure.
shrewd observation, Terry. So if the purpose of collecting the data is limited to that which is required by registrars and registries to administer and provide service and make the domain name resolvable and work well, and even if we include in that with consensus policy, then those purposes would limit the amount of data collected, and the sorts of data you're concerned about would not be collected. So it's not, this is about, you know, and I know you get this, so that's why I'm certain I'm missing your point. So this isn't about which data is collected. It's once collected for purposes in line with registry and registrar requirements, then under what circumstances could it be shared with third parties? So let's go on to Thomas, because I'm taking too long with this. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Kurt. And I think what we need to do is demystify what's behind 4.4.8. I think we really need to write up what the specific purposes are and how those purposes shall be operationalized. 4.4.8 is so broad of a statement. You know, we do not know what data shall be processed, how. We do not know whether the registrar is addressed to do something, whether data shall be revealed to third parties. You know, all this is unknown, and I think that a lot of the anxieties in the discussion stem from the fact that we don't know what's behind it. So let's fill it with life. Let's write up whether, you know, DNS abuse is, you know, or IP protection is limited to URS and UDRP, or if not, what additional features we need, and then let's do the legal analysis as we've discussed earlier. And I think once we get to a greater level of granularity, there will be a lot of points that we can agree on, not least because many of those points are in ICANN's documents already, and then let's discuss those where we might open the floodgates and put additional the required safeguards in place to avoid that things get out of control. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. And, you know, taking the risk of talking again, and specifically to Milton, I something I didn't respond to earlier and I meant to is why we're not discussing the sections that precede 4.4. I think that's because, you know, I think we'd be comparing these 4.4 sections to against the GDPR and not against the ICANN role. So which of these are allowable through GDPR? And take that out of the debate of ICANN's purpose. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think a lot of the language here is possibly unnecessarily inflammatory and sets off alarm bells. I had thought the use of the word framework when we were coming to the spec in the small group, because supposing a framework to address consumer protection, investigation of cybercrime, et cetera, that is extremely broad language. Framework, broadening it even further. What ICANN has responsibility to do is to ensure that these goals are not thwarted. The purpose of ICANN is not to enable the collection of data to support the goals, not in any way suggesting that the goals of law enforcement and intellectual property protection are not worthy goals, but we do not set up a quasi-regulatory system in order to benefit third parties. You know, exceptions to that are very, very limited in the regulatory world, so why would it be different? And you have letters from the DPAs predating the GDPR discussion that are very explicit on this point. So I think that we need to seriously rework these sections because they are far too broad. And I don't think we're going to stop overreacting to them. So I agree with Milton. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. So I think I want to say, well, go ahead, Alan, and because we're running out of time here. So
yep.
Let's get all the comments out. I'll make some closing remarks, and then we'll wrap the meeting. So please go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. Stephanie hit on the exact point I was going to make. I'll say it in a slightly different way. I think one of the major problems with the temporary specification is the use of the term framework. It's not defined, and it is overly broad. A framework essentially says it's the infrastructure of a vehicle. Or of something, it's the part that supports it. We have a responsibility, I believe, to provide some of the data elements, the components of the infrastructure, the overall infrastructure for enabling law enforcement to do its work relating to the internet is not our business. I believe strongly it is our business to ensure that the law enforcement framework can work, and that requires access to certain information. But saying it's we're responsible for the framework, and the same is true for several of the other aspects, the technical operation of the internet, where else do we use the word framework? It's used in a bunch of places, and I think it's overly broad and widens our scope far beyond what it actually is. But I think that can be fixed by changing the wording, not the overall the overall intent of those sections. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So, a few things. One is when I read framework as being in the temporary specification in a way that. Conclusions we make during our discussion here and then in the access discussion, which will follow the preliminary report on this temporary specification, could be accommodated. So I interpreted framework as being available and ready to support decisions that are made during this discussion, and especially in the detailed access discussion where we lay out rules for the conditions under which access is granted. So I didn't see a problem with the word framework, as it was not sort of a commandment to make data available, but when the decision is made how data is made available, then that could be made. And then I think there's two things. In email after this, somehow we need to frame up the question that, you know, we do agree that data collected for the purposes of performance of the contract by registries and registrars, which includes, you know, supporting domain name registrants, you know, that data once defined and described can be made available to third parties under certain conditions. So without expanding that data based on a definition of ICANN mission, but just taking the data list that's developed by registrars to do their job, both to support registrants and in compliance with consensus policies, that data can then be not expanded upon, but shared with third parties. I take Thomas's comment on board again. And in the previous section where we asked, I asked registrars to suggest that they either agree with the purposes outlined as they're worded in the temporary specification for those sections, I would call on third parties that want to have access to data to flesh out for us at least 4.4.8 and some detail there so we can describe what data elements that might be, which is our next step, and then possibly 4.4.9. So those would be the two kind of rapid homework assignments, because the next meeting's coming up. Ashley, I saw your hand up. Did you want to say something?
I'll save it for the next call. Thanks.
Great. So, Marika, is someone ready to close on actions or questions?
Yes, Kurt. This is Marika. I have those. So I took down, I believe, four action items from today's meeting. The first one being the team to share recommendations for whom or which organization should be considered by the leadership team to provide GDPR training to the EDP team. And I take note of two suggestions that have already been made both by Aidan and by Theo in the chat. Action item two, the EPDP team to provide input on the path forward for the triage report on the mailing list. There were different options outlined in the presentation today, so everyone's encouraged to provide their feedback on that. Action item three, the team to review the issue categorization and the proposed project plan and provide any feedback you may have. And then action item four, for staff to review whether any other policies would need to be called out in the purposes in addition to dispute resolution services. And no questions noted for ICANN.org.
Okay, thanks. And I just Emma, so I'd rather evaluate 4.4.8 and 9 against the GDPR and not against the ICANN mission. So what are the, you know, what are the conditions under which you know, under 4.4.9, law enforcement, and under 4.4.8, others can have access to data that's collected by registrars for the purpose of their contract. So, go ahead.
Were you asking me a question, Kurt, or?
Well, I was kind of answering your question, but since you have the mic, if you want to, if you can signify that you understood it or maybe disagreed, but at least understood what I said or asked a question.
Yeah, I think my point really was that 4.4.8 particularly, and perhaps to a lesser extent 4.4.9, seemed to be a follow-up to 4.2 and 4.3, particularly in terms of the bylaws reference in those two provisions in the temp spec, because, you know, the issue of adequately addressing issues of competition, consumer protection, security, stability, and resiliency, malicious abuse issues, the sovereignty concerns, those are referenced in the bylaws. Reference to those is provided in 4.2, and then sort of the temp spec sort of builds upon that in 4.4.8. So I do see a close association, and I think it might be helpful to review them together.
Okay, thanks, Amr. With that, we'll be following up with with notes and actions for next meeting. So again, thanks very much for your generous donation of time and listening to me, and then participating energetically and constructively during this discussion. So wherever you are, have a great rest of the day, and thanks very much.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please disconnect all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.